Hey, did you know that the 2014 Caterham F1 team has produced a total of 5 victories in the Triple Crown of Motorsports? It's true. Andre Lotterer has won 3 Le Mans. Kamui Kobayashi's won it once. Mark Sarrazin just won the Indianapolis 500. And Will Stevens was there at the end. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
No episode of Motorsport 101 is complete without Will the Lad Stevens. You love to see it. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 366 of Motorsport 101, the leap year edition of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. And we are starting the triple block of what we call Classics Weekend. Dave Classics, we like to call it. First and foremost, big thank you to everybody that tuned in on Twitch for 8 hours and 12 minutes of fun, where we covered MotoGP at Mugello. We had the Monaco Grand Prix that went way longer than anticipated. And, of course, the 106th running of the Indianapolis 500. And the 500 of you tuned in over the course of the day. Some of you guys were in there for pretty much the entire 8 hours. Shout out to JB. Shout out to Jason, who's in our chat right now listening in. Shout out to Jason. And he was there pretty much the whole way through. Thanks, everyone who did. Thanks, everyone who followed our Twitch page. Our brand new Twitch page. twitch.tv/motorsport101_. Massive thanks, everyone who did that. Special thanks as well to my cohorts who joined us over the course of that week as well. And especially to one, the man, the myth, the legend, as we go around the horn, Mr. Ryan King, for putting the whole thing together from a technical standpoint. He did a tremendous amount of work to make it happen. So, King, thank you, man. You're the best.
No problem.
Good to see you, buddy. How's it going down there?
It's going well. The 500 didn't play out the way I'd like. I liked it to play out.
I think I'm right in saying that 3 of the 4 of us live on Twitch when we did our preview for it, picked the Chip Ganassi driver. We just all picked the wrong one. Way to go, guys!
All of our picks were spectacularly wrong.
That's Cam. Wow. That's Cam Buckley, by the way. Cam, good to see you, buddy. How's it going?
You know, it's going okay. It was it was a solid enough birthday weekend with lots of good racing. And regarding our picks for the Indianapolis 500, we are dumb bitches with terrible taste. We will never change. We will never improve. And that is our promise to you.
Yep. And we will never log off either. So there you go. Yeah, Cam, who was with us on the day as well, he came in and did the whole stream on his birthday. What a true gent. He's 25 today. God damn it, I'm jealous. he's the baby of the four of us on this show, and we love him very much. Also, welcome back, Mr. RJ O'Connell. How's it going, buddy?
Busy weekend. Glad to be through it all. I'm sure more intriguing adventures. What I want to know is, whose ice cream truck is just rolling down the road?
Yeah, that is outside of my window. I assume Marcus Ericsson's outside driving that ice cream truck.
Is that part of his media tour after he's won it now? He's got to drive an ice cream truck through the whole of New York.
When did the estate of Yogi Berra okay unretiring the number 8 for him to play to the New York Yankees? In number 8. I've seen him throw out that first pitch. Someone needs to check that man for spider tack. And since this is the leap year episode of M101, who all is excited about Big Bartholomew versus Mr. McElroy and a siege creature? That's what I want to know.
Good question. My money's on the sea creature. So, over the course of this triple block, we're going to be talking all about the 106th run-in of the Indianapolis 500. And yeah, you did read that correctly. Marcus Ericsson did indeed win the Indy 500. We'll be talking all about that and how we got to the point where Chip Ganassi's third wheel ended up stealing it all ahead of a very angry Scott Dixon. Pancakes officially off the menu for at least another year. We'll be talking about some of the winners and losers of that race as well, because boy. If you were a title contender who didn't have their season ruined by this race, congratulations!
be Marcus Ericsson, because it was everyone else.
Everyone bar maybe Alex Palou, basically, at this point. Congratulations! You survived. It was like going through a minefield while blindfolded.
That's right.
By the time we got to the end of
this. Andre, you know what else we got? We got a throwback to 2017. We have a genuine throwback to 2017 where a Dale Coyne racing driver who probably should have been the Rookie of the Year on merit didn't win Rookie of the Year.
Really? What a shock. What do you mean we here at the Motorsport 101, David Malukas hive mind, was robbed by the heathen that is Jimmy Johnson? How dare he win the Rookie of the Year award? Sorry, I didn't know I was a member of the press all of a sudden. We'll be talking beef. Sizzling beef. Because for the last 48 hours, we have had tension on social media between members of the media and a certain Dale Coyne entity regarding who should have won the Rookie of the Year award. We'll get into some of that as well over the next hour or so. But first and foremost, here's the places you can find us if you like the cut of our jib. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you want to follow us personally on our handles, you can at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, and at CBuckley917. You can remember, you can follow our brand new Twitch page as well for all our live shows. That'll be twitch.tv/motorsport101_. You can follow us on Instagram at motorsport101pod for all the updates on there as well, and all of our content and all of us on our website, as always, motorsport101.com. You can check out reviews from yours truly on all three of the big Day of Classics events we had this past weekend. Over 5,000 words in all. It was a fun time. I actually really enjoyed it, to be fair. It was a lot of fun stuff to break down. I'm enjoying putting that out there. So check it out in the blog section if you haven't already, if you want even more from yours truly on the weekend of classics. But, gentlemen, let's sit down and talk the 106th Indianapolis 500.
So, going into the 2018 Formula One season, I think we all agree that when you look at that Alfa Romeo Sauber F1 team, you could just see that one driver was destined to win one leg of the prestigious Triple Crown of Motorsport.
Was the other person Charles Leclerc?
Well, how we got there was interesting, to say the least. We had 500 miles of drama. We had Scott Dixon leading 95 laps on the day, almost assured a victory until he was caught overspeeding into the pit lane on his final pit stop, opening the door for none other than Marcus Ericsson. Marcus Ericsson, who had never finished better than 11th at three previous starts in this event. Going through the door that had just been opened and driving away from the field. Then, after a late red flag, he holds off McLaren SP's Patricio Award at a two-lap sprint to win the 106th running of the Indianapolis 500 as a 12-1 medium shot? I think we could say.
Yeah.
Obviously, not the driver that I think all of us would have picked at first, but fair play to him. He's done it. Trey, what did you make of this all?
75% of us on this show may or may not have picked the two frontline Chip Ganassi cars of Dixon and Palou, who led, nearly 140 laps of this race between them.
The first quarter of the race was just them trading the lead back and forth to make the fuel numbers because they could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they could. The story of this race will ultimately go down as Chip Ganassi controlling this race, losing control of this race, and then getting it back again right at the end. That's what it's going to ultimately boil down to, because like I said, Dixon and Palou led combined over 130 laps, and over two-thirds of this race they led. Thanks for Jason for doing the maths for me. It's 142 out of 200 laps was led by those two drivers. Nearly three quarters of this race. And somehow neither of them found a way to win it because Palou was basically caught out by a caution and had to make an emergency
stop. Remember what happened
to
Dixon last year? The same thing that happened to Dixon last year happened to Palou this year. Except Pillow was lucky enough to claw his way back into ninth, which probably saved his championship aspirations at this stage, although it's still a long two-thirds of the season to come. We'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Dixon, who eventually made a driver error and lost control of his car going into pit entry and was caught speeding.
Scott Dixon penalty choked another Indy 500.
I take full, like, if you're a Dixon fan and listening to this show, I take full responsibility for this one. This was me. I picked Dixon to win this race. I danced with the devil and I drew snake eyes. I sincerely apologize. This one's on me. Like, I am so sorry, Dixon fans of the world out there. But the thing is, and the thing I want to highlight about this, a lot of people were taken aback by Marcus Ericsson winning this. And look, I know for a fact that a lot of these people were F1 fans who only look at these things in the perspective of Formula One. And yes, Marcus Ericsson's F1 career was relatively disappointing, right? You know, some people would call it a bust. I completely understand that perspective. Like, he was a journeyman at best. If you've been paying attention to Marcus Ericsson in IndyCar for the last 2 years, you'll see that this was no fluke. Like, he has gotten better and better in IndyCar as the years have gone by. We looked at him like he was a pay driver when he went to Chip Ganassi Racing. The third wheel with the big fancy chocolate sponsor. None of us took him seriously in that number 8 car, right? Last season he was 6th in the championship. That's really, really good. Won 2 races, had I think something like 11 top 10 finishes on the year. Just consistently good.
We bury a given piece of media when a character shows next to no development across that piece of media, but we don't take any example of that seriously in real life. Marcus Ericsson over the last 3 years has legitimately improved as a racing driver.
Yeah. No doubt about it. He has gotten better and better year on year. And even just in the context of the 2 weeks that led up to this, he was always in contention. He qualified 5th, went completely under the radar. Because again, we were all enamored with Dixon's historic qualifying run, and rightly so. It was an incredible run. Of course it was. Like, and it deserved all the plaudits that it got. He qualified 5th. He was never outside of the top 10 in any practice session over the course of the 2 weeks that led up to this race. He was always in the mix, always fast, always in contention, always kept it clean. And when everybody else around him made these mistakes, or goofed up, or was unfortunate with the way the cookie crumbled over the course of this race, Marcus was always in the right place at the right time. And the one that leaped off the page to me, and I've got to give credit to Chris DeHardy for mentioning this on Twitter, who was covering the race. Like, the fastest lap of the entire 500 was on lap 179 as Dixon was coming in for his stop, and it was by Marcus Ericsson. He did a 224.8 mile an hour lap.
Yeah, him busting out on the bots after his final pit stop with the fastest lap of the race really, really helped. It got him ahead of Award. It got him ahead of Felix Rosen. It helped get him ahead of
Award. It didn't, though, RJ. He had to go and pass them. He had to go that fast to go and get the McLaren boys before they could link up as far as a draft.
And once he did, he just drove away from them. That was the thing. If not for that red flag, he wins this race by multiple seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a 3-second gap.
Yeah. Had a 3-second lead until that penultimate caution with Johnson wrecking.
I think the past does matter when in the context of this latest story, because I love it when a racing driver that's been slagged for years can get off the canvas and take the narrative that's been ripped up, that's been written about them. You could grab that piece of paper, crumple it up, and throw it in the fucking garbage. You know, maybe for 5 seasons at F1, Marcus Ericsson was just the wrong driver at the wrong time most of the time. I mean, we're not going to pretend like we didn't wish that all the opportunities they had to stick around the sport should have gone to someone like Kamui Kobayashi, Felipe Nasr, Pascal Wehrlein. But you know what the best part about all this now? None of it matters anymore. None of it matters because he's won the Indianapolis 500. You know, I wrote my preview of the race for race fans. I'll admit, I I almost left Marcus Ericsson off the test. And, you know, I'm thinking, like, Scott Dixon set the fastest pole lap in history, and he's hungry to win his second. Alex Palou's the reigning champion. You have a super rookie, Jimmy Johnson, whose debut has been anticipated for years. And you have Tony Kanaan, who may or may not be in his last Indy 500 and still going strong at age 47. So yeah, in a five-car stable, of course, Ericsson was going to fly under the radar, where he'd previously finished 23rd, wrecked out in 32nd, and finished 11th. There were way sets your picks on the board. I mean, if you want to be a cynical bastard about it all when you're listening to this, then yeah, Marcus Ericsson didn't win the race any more than Scott Dixon lost it. And yeah, Marcus Ericsson's never won a race cleanly without some weird red flag shenanigans. And he never gotten that ride at Ganassi without a dump truck of cash for a hot chocolate company. But you know what? They don't engrave asterisks on the BorgWarner trophy for all that, and they don't deduct prize money based on how you win the race. In fact, Marcus Ericsson just won $3.1 million for all of this.
Lord.
The biggest person in the history.
Yeah. Biggest prize pool ever. $16 million prize pool for this entire race.
Here's the thing with all this. It is not called the Indianapolis 400, 450, or in the case of J.R. Hildebrand, 499.7.
Oh.
It is the Indianapolis 500.
Though, it seemed like on the day, it seemed like Marcus Ericsson was going to win the Indianapolis 495, but race control was... almost seemed determined to rip the trophy out of his hands in the last 5 miles.
Who do we have to blame for that? We've got to have a finish, King. I'll tell you, a finish.
I'll tell you, when they red flagged that race, I mean, he was doing everything to keep the field behind him. It wasn't just a war, because Tony Kanaan was on a heater, too. And on that last lap, Pato gets what may have been the run. He gets three quarters of the way past.
He backed out of it.
But in that stage, he's got to be all the way clear going into turn one, because Ericsson's not going to lift. I love this for Marcus Ericsson. I don't think it would have mattered.
I just think Pato backed out of a move that he probably could have got done.
I don't know. Pato kind of said without saying that he had the car trimmed out as far as it can go, and the Chevys just weren't giving him enough horsepower.
I think he made a business decision that day, and I think he made the wrong business decision on that
one. Agreed.
I think he had a shot. I think, like, it's the final lap of the Indy 500 if you don't pin
it there.
We
saw what happened with Takuma Sato 10 years ago.
No, but that's not the same, RJ.
No.
It's not the same, but it's
not
similar.
Even close. No, it's not even similar.
It's not close, because going around the outside, awards race is in Ericsson's hands.
Yeah, and Ericsson's not going to back out of that. And I still don't think O'Ward was clear enough to make that move.
I'm inclined to disagree. I think Pato made a business decision there.
It's going to turn out fine for him, because, you know, that's a huge boost to his championship. At the end of the day, I don't know if this is going to be as good as it gets for Marcus Ericsson in IndyCar. We'll see if he goes on.
I mean, it is. He just won the Indy 500.
The only way he can improve his standing after this is doing it again.
Yeah. Either he wins it again, he wins a championship, or this is just one and done. But, you know, if it does turn out to be the one shining moment of a career that turns out to be above average to find after this, so what? His face is on the BorgWarner trophy forever, and they can't take that away from him, because his car cleared post-race tech.
You can't take it away from him. And not a bad business decision for Pato, because he takes home $1 million.
Wait, he got $1 million just for second?
Yeah. Look at the box score, and also look at the box score and note it, and you can really, really tell which teams are in the winner's circle and which ones aren't. Good, because I can never figure out who's actually in the winner's circle or not sometimes.
Oh yeah. That was awesome. Good for Marcus. He's totally embraced it, and it sucks that I find it amazing that until literally yesterday you couldn't buy a t-shirt with Marcus Ericsson on it in IndyCar. Until today. So,
until yesterday, yeah. I think he was still in that race suit encrusted in milk, smelling like hot ass.
I don't envy him on that one.
Avoided having to chug buttermilk.
Yes!
Not only did you avoid it, Ed Carpenter's car on the final restart ensured it.
Oh, look, no.
Look, I, for those of us who don't know, I may or may not have had a bet saying that if Ed Carpenter finally won a 500, I would be forced to drink buttermilk against my will, which is what he suggested to drink on the milk list going into. He does this every year. He's a strange human, Ed Carpenter. But thankfully, his car stalled in pit lane going into the final restart, and that didn't happen. Nothing personal, Ed. I like you a lot, actually. But I was like,
when that last red flag came out, I was thinking this would have been some sick, terrible joke if Marcus Ericsson lost the Indy 500 the same way that he eventually won his first race.
Oh, God. My man made sure he was going to win it because he was weaving so hard. You think he was playing Snake on one of those old Nokia phones from 1998. Like, just...
Serpentine!
Yeah, but I think it's especially an important distinction to make for Formula One fans that it's legal to do that. You can move across the track on your own as long as you're not moving in response to someone behind you.
Yeah, if you're setting the tone, that's fine.
Oh, we saw this in 2019 with Simon.
Yep, exactly. Absolutely fine. Oh, boy. But Marcus Ericsson, folks, your 106th Indy 500 winner. He's also now top of the Astor Cup standings, as well as 13-point lead on Alex... Pato Award, I should say, second, and then Alex Palou was a point behind him in third. So, yeah, Marcus Ericsson, your new favorite for the championship this year as well.
And but there's something back to Detroit.
And yeah, of course, because we race in Detroit this weekend, he's gone well around there before as well. His first podium in the series.
Turns out you can have shit in Detroit.
Yeah, who knew? Should we talk about the other side of the coin here for a minute?
Yeah, let's talk about losers. Let's talk about losers. Lot of title contenders coming into the Indianapolis 500 had some pretty tough days. We talked about Scott Dixon's speeding penalty that ripped a surefire second BorgWarner trophy out of his hands. Alex Palou getting caught out during a caution flag at the end of a pit window, the same thing that happened to Dixon last year. Two of the three Penske's stalled during their pit stops and then fell down the order, and the only one that didn't was Scott McLaughlin, and he crashed and then nearly collected Ed Carpenter in the process. And Andretti Autosport, apart from Alexander Rossi, soon to be departing Alexander Rossi, didn't have a good showing at all. So, folks, who was the biggest loser coming out of the Indianapolis 500?
Put the camera on me. We're no longer a visual medium. Team Penske stinks.
They own this place now, and they're still just so mid-round. This place owns them.
Scotty crashed.
So mid-round here?
Newgarden was running okay, had a horrible pit stop. Then the stall was very anonymous. Will Power might as well have had a hamster in the back of his car powering him. They were horrible. They were terrible. And they were still probably better than Andretti.
Yeah, easily. Easily still better than Andretti. Andretti were miserable. Like, I don't think anything highlights the misery of Andretti's 500 more than, one, the man leaving them finishing in the top five. That's funny. Like, we all know Rossi's been generally excellent at the 500 for his entire career. The other four Andretti's in this race, 20th, 22nd, 30th, and 31st.
Yeah, the only one who could run legitimate top 10 on pace all day was Romain Grosjean, who crashed out of two about midway through the race.
Everybody was crashing out on two, and Scott McLaughlin decided to change it up by crashing into three.
to say nothing of Jimmy Johnson, more on him later, brings
a whole new meaning to his hashtag of thirsty freeze. He was committed to the bit of crashing with his with the term of his number on it. Oh, Scotty.
Dude, that's not the way to do it for Dale.
Dude.
But that doesn't put a spotlight on perhaps the most disappointing portion of Andretti. Colton Herta had a day from hell.
Ugh.
Do you remember in 2019 when Marco Andretti was seemingly driving the slowest Dallara IR18 in the field, and they had to pit him like 172 times to fix what was wrong with the car, and they never got it fixed?
That's what
that looked like here. Now, there is context behind this. He wrecked and flipped his primary car on carb day. They had a wheel at the backup, the same car that won the Grand Prix of Indy, but clearly it wasn't dialed in for the race. It looked evil to drive.
I mean, his primary car didn't look all that fun. None of the Andretti's did. They just seemed unstable all month.
You know what was really telling is that officially he's listed as a mechanical retirement, but when they interviewed Colton on NBC, he said, yeah, they parked us because they were going too slow.
Yeah, he was parked by race control.
The Jean Alesi special.
At the end of the day, Scott Dixon, he bottled another Indy 500 in a race that he's cursed at still. Pillow may have been caught out in the caution, and Penske had another anonymous day at the track. They all came away for the rest of the season better off than they probably could have been, because all of Penske's drivers are still within 64 points of the lead. This was bad for Colton Herta and his chances of winning the championship.
I think it was probably equally awful championship-wise for Herta and Dixon. But, man, at least Dixon looked competitive. Better than competitive. He led almost half the race. Colton Herta didn't once look like a threat for the top 25.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, look, the thing is, as well, if you read between the lines of Colton Herta, we all know that Colton's got F1 aspirations. Like, he went out of his way to get that development deal with McLaren. He's angling for some sort of F1 seat, whether it be with Zach at McLaren or whether it be with the eventual Andretti F1 team, whatever that may be. I need to remind everybody here, Colton Herta only has 32 super license points. He needs 8 more to actually be eligible for one right now, which means he needs to finish, and I did Google this and check, he needs to finish in the top 5 of the championship this year to actually claim that super license if he wants an F1 drive as early as this year.
That's under question.
Yeah.
There is a bit of wiggle room because he does have practice time with McLaren later on this season. So if he puts in enough kilometers, he'll be able to.
I don't know,
somewhat
King. I think
limit.
Daniel Ricciardo needs all he can get.
Oh, buddy, I don't know if Colton Herta is first in line for that. And I don't think Daniel Ricciardo would accept an IndyCar drive at McLaren if they kick him out of the F1 team. Also, I appreciate that nobody brought up me picking Rinus VK to win the whole thing, only for him to crash out first. These things
first happen. Retirement. As a side note, RJ, the next time you ever tell me about Joseph Newgarden and his aspirations to win the Indy 500, I will laugh you out of the room.
Joseph Newgarden is going to win the Indianapolis 500 one year, but it wasn't this year.
And there it is.
You see, there it is. Other notes. MSR. Solid. Not great. Not terrible. Solid.
They're not losers at all. Look, I cannot get over the fact that the most viral tweet regarding the middle of that race was a tweet that said, quote, oh, look, another Bitcoin crash in regards to Rinus VK being the first man out. Which, oh dear. Look, RJ, look at it this way. At least he still gave us a spin move, right? That's nice.
It's not the right kind.
Oh. And yeah, get well soon, as Jason puts in the chat, get well soon, Kanemato, because he broke his wrist on his turn 2 incident. That was a nasty.
We'll get into that as we talk about the rookies, because rookies were
a hot topic.
We're in the roots. Jimmy Johnson was voted Indianapolis 500 Rookie of the Year. He finished 28th. David Malukas and Dale Coyne finished 16th. That was highest of all the rookies. They weren't impressed. It got to the point where Jenna Fryer, the Associated Press, was actually going back and forth with Malukas on Twitter for potential deal breakers like salty tweets. So what do you make of this beef, and what do you make of the whole Indy 500 Rookie of the Year process, which is now coming under the microscope for the second time in the last 6 runnings, because a highly a popular driver from another form of racing has come in and taken that plate away from a rookie out of the Dale Coyne system.
Well, at least last time this happened, they might have actually had a point. Because when Fernando Alonso was here in 2017, he led a bunch of laps and was probably in contention for the win before his Honda engine decided to vacate its block.
Do you want my opinion on this?
Kind of boils down to a popularity contest at this point.
Yeah, it's nonsense. Like the criteria is complete intangible nonsense. Now, I will borrow the exact tweet I read this from Jenna Fryer regarding what the exact criteria for the Rookie of the Year award is, and I quote, criteria includes on-track performance in practice, qualifying in the race, media and fan interaction, sportsmanship, and positive influence on the Indy 500. Now, everything after the word the race is literally intangible bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, I could literally make an argument right now that Christian Lingard knocked on all those Speedway houses, he bought all the media pen, like a bottle of champagne to say thanks for coming. You know, he could have, you know, shaken hands with some fans and taken some autographs and selfies. And at that point, I could make a feasible argument based on the criteria that Christian Lingard was the Rookie of the Year. I don't mean this in any ill will towards Christian at all.
Though,
I'm just using his name as an example to prove the bullshit of this award.
No, it's though, nonsense. Also, based on that criteria, there's no way any other rookie would have been able to beat 7-time NASCAR Cup Series champion Jimmy Johnson in the amount of media attention he brought this race.
Like, you're talking about one of the greatest drivers in the history of North American motorsport.
Like,
ever.
Based on that criteria, the minute that Chip Ganassi Racing submitted their entry for Jimmy Johnson,
he didn't even need
for
to
this
enter
race.
The race.
Yeah.
Punch it in. It's over. It's
like, look, like, here's the thing. I get all of that. And don't get me wrong, I was not expecting Jimmy Johnson to come into IndyCar and be 2007 beating the field to a pulp Jimmy Johnson.
I don't think
anybody. But he was embarrassing on race day. Like, honestly,
he was good.
Honestly, being 100% real, like, at this point, anytime there's a high-profile driver as a rookie in the Indianapolis 500, it effectively becomes a championship belt in professional wrestling when all you're trying to do is boost the prestige of being Rookie of the Year to say that Jimmy Johnson was Rookie of the Year.
This would be like giving Rookie of the Year to Fernando Alonso in 2019 when he didn't take the race.
Just so later down the line you could say, two-time Formula One world champion Fernando Alonso was Rookie of the Year at one point. Like, it's just simply to boost the prestige of the award itself.
And yeah, look, none clout of the rookies were especially amazing. Malukas
that
was going to
be my point. Yeah,
solid. Like, and DeFrancesco, terrifyingly, was solid enough given Andretti's struggles. Jimmy Johnson made arguably the biggest driver error of the day. He was in the grass when he spun around and crashed.
Yeah.
He almost cost his team the victory in the process. And from Fast 12 qualifying on, looked every bit out of his depth as he has for the rest of his time in IndyCar, which wasn't the expectation going into this. And up to Fast 12 qualifying, he had been pretty damn good.
He was excellent until that point.
None of the rookies were genuine top six speed.
Romain Grosjean was top 10 when he crashed out. I'll at least give him that.
He'd fallen off since the start of the race. Grosjean and Johnson really wasted having good start spots, tumbled down the order before they wrecked. Callum Ilott crashed out and broke his hand off a double impact, so now he's out of Detroit. He can't keep getting away with this, even with his fake mustache. And then David Malukas, Kyle Kirkwood, Christian Lingard, Devlin DeFrancesco, all did very well to finish their first Indianapolis 500s. And the reality was they were fighting for scraps and none of them were even threatening for, at least Ed Jones was threatening to take Takuma Sato and Ed Elvio Castro Neves' lunch money in 2017.
Yeah.
And when nobody really distinguishing themselves is driving the any better than fine, and when you have someone with the pull that Jimmy Johnson is, of course, a voting panel that's made up by track officials, series officials, and old money media types are not going to miss a chance to give the most anticipated rookie driver in over 5 years the only award he realistically had a shot at, or at the very least, make sure that it wasn't going to go to the youngest rookie with the least clout that finished runner-up in a championship with only 10 cars. And, you know, that's just the thing about these awards that are voted on. They're not decided by true points. Trust us, as fans of stick and ball sports, we've seen some atrocious awards voting in our times.
But honestly, this is far worse than most of those. Gonna be real here.
Yeah, this is terrible. This is an objectively bullshit award with an objectively bullshit criteria that can easily have the ballot box cracked. And I'm sorry, but when it get, it's one thing, right? We all kind of knew that Jimmy Johnson was going to win this award if you know the criteria of how this award works, yeah. Right? Unfortunately, when it comes to the beef regarding this, Jenna Fryer was saying the quiet bit out loud on Twitter. Like,
yeah, she basically just outed how BS this was.
And this has been going on for a long time, because you go back to 1966 when they decided Rookie of the Year. They decided Graham Hill did not win the Indianapolis 500 as a rookie. Jackie Stewart lost the Indianapolis 500 as a rookie, and we're going to give him the consolation prize.
Yeah, and especially in the modern format about how the road to Indy works, and how if you become Indy Lights champion, you don't get a full season ride. You get a part-time ride, including the Indianapolis 500. They're paying you to be a rookie here. What does it tell you that you can't win the top prize as a rookie because you decided to devote your career to specifically getting to IndyCar?
Dude, Richie Hearn finished third as a rookie in 1996, and they gave the award to Tony Stewart, who popped an engine after 82 laps.
My rookie of the year is Kyle Kirkwood, purely for getting fired at Andretti.
Dude, yeah. they split the 2002 award between Alex Baron and Thomas Schechter.
Yeah.
But King, it's obvious. Malukas just didn't shake enough hands on Speedway Drive. He left one too many journalists out in the cold. You know, to win
the
award.
We were out here having Carvana Jimmy Johnson ads side by side with the red flag caused by Jimmy Johnson.
I would have thought it would have been so. I thought it would have been so cool if Jimmy Johnson had captured lightning in a bottle and instead he dropped the bottle.
Wanted him to just.
He was good in Texas.
He was fine in Texas. He finished sixth in a Ganassi car, and as we've seen, Ganassi cars on oval are cracked.
Yeah, they are really good. No, look, I don't like this award. And I don't like the criteria for it. It's like I said, it's completely intangible nonsense. We learned nothing from Fernando Alonso in 2017, and I still look.
But Alonso, you had half a point. Because he was fighting for the win before a piston decided to enter low Earth orbit.
That's just the problem, Cam. You can use this criteria to form a BS argument about whoever you want if you try hard enough. That's what makes the whole thing a farce, because it's like, oh, well, you know, sportsmanship. And then, of course, when Dale Coyne understandably tweeted on Main that they thought Malukas was robbed, because heaven forbid a team defends their driver.
They got dogpiled.
You know, like
they got dogpiled by actual IndyCar media.
Amazing. Yeah,
and the thing is that what you get $50,000 for winning a rookie of the year to Jimmy Johnson, that's nothing. But a lights champion with a part time ride, meaning that they're not in the leader's circle, that would boost their earnings for that race by at least a third if they won that rookie of the year award.
Yeah. Like for a team like Dale Coyne and for a driver like David Malukas, that money matters. It does. And for Jimmy Johnson, $50,000 ain't shit to someone like him. And that's what makes it doubly unfortunate. Because
I don't have a problem with this being a vote-based award, but I get the feeling that we really need to kind of shake up who votes on this award.
Yep.
Because I know if I had a vote, I know if Chris had a vote, we weren't going to be voting for Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah, just pretty
just give it to the highest finisher. Honestly, I even got a massive problem with media dudes voting on this. I just think you've got to change the criteria.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, sportsmanship doesn't mean shit. Like, what is that? How do you measure that?
How do you measure sportsmanship? We are developing analytics to quantify.
We measure this based around how many Carvana ads we're seeing.
Yeah, I want it to be measured in such a way that foolish baseball has to do a video about the sabermetrics of fan interaction at the Indy 500. It's nonsense. Change the criteria. Fan interaction, buttering up the media interaction in a media-based award. What more do I need to add to this, people? It's nonsense. Get rid of that part of the line. Fuck that. Like, David Malukas, I hereby declare the real Indy 500 Rookie of the Year is David Malukas. Thank you very much, and good night.
I declare the Firestone Firehawk the Indianapolis Rookie of the Year.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. I think Firehawk cleared his rookie certification back in 95 when they re-entered the sport.
Yep. Mm.
But we have our own award on this show. I call it the Underrated Gem of the Race Award, and we have actual criteria for this one. It's the person we thought was the most underrated performance of the day at the 500.
The best loser.
We got an award for it. We love to see it. So, gentlemen, so your nominees for the Underrated Gem of the 500 Award.
So, the best part to me about Alexander Rossi's Indianapolis 500 performance wasn't even that he clawed his way up from 20th on the grid to finish 5th with some brave moves on restarts that really reminded us of just how good this dude is when he's not being flattened by cartoon anvils every other weekend, and demonstrated also why he still has value to a team like Arrow McLaren SP, which, spoilers, by the time you listen to this, they're probably going to announce him at McLaren either in a third car or replacing another driver in the second. Who's to say? The best thing about his performance is that nobody would have ever suspected he was the one that filled Connor Daly's hot tub full of marbles that whole fucking time.
1.4 million, I think it was.
The best part about it was the way he was just like, hey, Connor, you thought there was that many? Guess again, there was this many.
Bang! Gotta love Alex Rossi. My nominee is the Felix Rosenquist.
That was going to be my nomination. You were on my same brain cell.
Felix Rosenquist was 4th, and this is a man
Felix
who
Rosenquist saved his job.
Think this was a job saver, because I've never heard Rosenquist's name be associated with getting cut from the series, to be fair. Well, maybe not. But 69, nice. Very valuable points for his championship. A 4th place finish and a way to back up Pato, which is what everyone's been asking for Felix to do. Don't get me wrong. I don't think this is all on Felix. I know that McLaren have very much leaned into their plucky Mexican. And Felix has probably suffered a bit as a result of that. But to finish 4th and just be really solid across the 2 weeks in general. Shout out to Felix Rosenquist. That was a damn good haul. From Felix there. He needed that, and he got it. He got a big one, and he's been waiting for one of them.
Think about this angle from the ascension of Marcus Ericsson, right? Think about all the times where we were thinking the wrong Swede has been in Formula 1 the whole time, and now Marcus Ericsson, an Indy 500 winner, and Felix Rosenquist just happy to finish 4th behind him?
Mm.
Man alive. There's some good candidates for some of these. King, who was your underrated gem of the race?
Oh, man. I'd say honorable mention to Connor Daly.
Yes.
Great day out on track.
Great, great drive from Connor. Great. Led 13 laps. Home crowd went wild when he took the lead for the first time.
got that Austin pop from the crowd.
Yep. Look, if there is one man who has deserved a good day at this speedway over the years, It's Connor fucking Daly, the Bad Luck Brian of the Indy 500. And he finished sixth. Great job from Connor.
Though,
and,
you know, my real underrated gem of the race, even though it doesn't seem like they were underrated going in, after getting caught going into a close fit entry, my pick, Alex Palou, drove his way all the way back up to 9.
Our pick.
he fought so hard.
King's looks like he's about to break into Linkin Park for a second there. I tried so hard to lose it all.
Oh my
god. In the end, it didn't even matter. No, that's an absolute
great. Now we're getting
shot.
A copyright strike.
Reese's Puffs, Reese's Puffs. Eat them up, eat them up, eat them up.
Oh my god.
No, Palou's comeback was something, and it pretty much saved his Aster Cup because he's still right there in contention. 56 very hard earned points for him in the end, despite everything. So, yeah, I think Palou would take that given he was at the back of the field halfway through. Cam?
Got a couple. Definitely Connor Daly. Led some laps, like you said. He's shown so much promise here, and this year he actually got a half-decent finish out of it.
Mm.
Elio Castroneves and Juan Pablo Montoya coming back from nowhere. From
Old man still got it. Old man still
Juan Pablo came back to 11th. Very canny from him. Castroneves got up to 7th in the end. Can't really call him underrated, given he's won this race 4 times, but...
Yeah.
Great old drive from Elio.
Great old drive. Too.
Shout out Tony Kanaan as well.
Oh, yeah.
If next year is his last time at the 500, I don't know. He came very close to getting win number 2 out of nowhere.
Yeah. But you know what? During that final red flag, when he's in the pit lane, he said on the radio, "It's all or nothing, man." And I nearly shit myself just listening to it.
got hosed on the final restart.
Yes, thank God. Probably for the best. The man is 48 on New Year's Eve. he's probably going to be back next year. Tony Kanaan, everybody. What a man. What a legend. But I think... because it's a hometown guy, we're going to give our underrated gem of the race to Connor Daly, everybody.
Oh, dear.
See, we can have a well-settled award to do the Indy 500, and we can applaud someone that deserves a bit of kudos. Well done,
now,
Connor.
Now, in solidarity with Ed Carpenter Racing, we will all take our required swig of buttermilk.
You could fuck off.
Who's
that.
This week?
Oh, dear. Any closing thoughts on the 500 before we get out of here, folks?
Santucci Farino can't keep getting away with this. I thought
he's aggravatingly good around here.
Yeah.
And it's going to parlay into another relief ride with Junko Salinger. He's so good at this, but he's so... You can't keep getting away with it!
Basically.
Also, as... I feel like a lot of the good points about the race itself were largely down to weird mishaps happening and, you know, things throwing curveballs and pit strategy than actual on-track racing.
Mm. Yeah, not a massive amount of passing here, not a massive amount of on-track action. But
not a lot of growth.
But still, at least we crescendoed into a nice finish. That was cool. Right?
That was one hell of a crescendo.
Yeah, I was like, we must finish under green. Michael,
solid 7. Solid 7 of a race. There have been better 500s. There have also been much, much worse 500s.
Yes,
that's good.
2020, anybody?
Oh God. Yeah. Never again.
Yeah, not ideal to say the least. But hey, a good 500. We'll happily take that. A fun one. And yeah, one last time, folks. Marcus Ericsson, your winner of the 106th Indianapolis 500. Suck it, Sauber!
You know, you look at these two 2018 Alfa Romeo Sauber drivers, and you think, huh, one of them's going to win a piece of the Triple Crown.
Yeah, exactly. Who'd have thought it? To wrap it up, I will borrow a line from what I wrote about it, where I said, the greatest endorsement of Marcus Ericsson's success is the fact that it really wasn't that big a surprise he won at all, if you were paying attention. That'll do it for our show this time round. Thanks for listening in, everybody. Basically, you can find us one more time, youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/motorsport101, Twitter at motorsport_101, our personal handles at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, at CBuckley917, our Instagram, motorsport101pod, our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/motorsport101_. You can watch the entire replay of Day of Classics if you want. It's on there, ready to go. It's over 8 hours long, so bring snacks. I would recommend it, as far as I would say. All of the details and some extra blog stuff as well on our website, motorsport101.com, if you want even more stuff to read about on that race as well. Thanks again to everyone that rolled up for Day of Classics as well. Much, much appreciated. And all of that. And a big shout out as well. I mentioned it in my post. I want to mention it here one more time. Shout out to Dalton Keller, who has raised over $6,000 to the victims of that horrific shooting in Texas last week. He's done brilliant work. He's been a fantastic ambassador for the race and the series over the course of this one. So shout out to Dalton Keller. He deserves a lot of praise for that one. I know it's easy to rag on the man, but he's a good lad. We appreciate that. Thanks, everyone, for watching along. I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell, Ryan Eric King, and Cam Buckley. We'll be back for something called the Monaco Grand Prix. And, well, that was an up and down one, to say the least. Especially if you're wearing red. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
On this day, more than any other day, we praise Chocolate Chip Ganassi Racing.
A husky one, indeed.
That's a contradiction. Dogs are allergic to chocolate.